Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger fuel centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel, where it is time once again for Second Helping, the show of choice for fans and followers of the number one league in all of collegiate athletics, the Southeastern Conference. Travis Ryer, alongside my great friend and co-host, Mr. Brent Beard. Brent, of course, longtime college football analyst. Most recent stop is First Coast News down in Jacksonville, Florida. Brent, of course, also a voter, longtime voter for the most prestigious individual honor in collegiate football, that being, of course, the Heisman Trophy. And Brent, as we're live here on a Tuesday night, we're getting ready for week 3 action in the league, where it just means more, and it does feel like, maybe even outside, it feels like a little bit, that we are on the precipice of the unofficial start of the 2025 season. Feels like we've had the preseason.
Yeah.
We've been able to use a couple of weeks to get a feel for a lot of these teams. Look, not to discount or devalue what we've seen the last 2 weeks, because it's been impactful for teams like Mississippi State, you would
Absolutely.
Think. Auburn with that week one win over Baylor. And then some teams for not so great reasons, like, well, the Alabama Crimson Tide in week one. And then the Florida Gators in week 2. But I know you're also happy about this too, Brent. Looks like we're going to have that single transfer portal window moving forward. I know coaches have got to be happy about
it. Oh, they do. I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, it will basically be around the first, second week of January, which means that coaches aren't going to be going through a lot of this foolishness for spring practice and for a spring game. We may actually have a few more spring games now. So, and look, I know spring game is not your ultimate goal if you're listening and watching, but it would be nice to have only one and have to deal with that. And then folks get lined, because, Trav, frankly, that wasn't a whole lot of fun to go through spring. And then what, maybe 2 days or a day later, you're in the portal. So I think if this goes, and I believe it will, it makes a lot of sense.
It's a great point, Brent. And we are, I think, is to your point, going to find out how many of these coaches were storying to us. Because if they were, and we still don't have spring games in some places, then – I think a lot of it, or at least some of it, was a pant load. Sorry to be so graphic and that descriptive.
Yeah.
But I really felt that way. We're going to find out.
Yep.
Because as you said, there shouldn't be this fear of poaching that we heard so much about back in March and April of this year. Something else interesting to consider too, I think, with this single portal and where it's going to sit, is potential moves at the head coaching level around college football. You know, we're already hearing around the SEC about turnover at places like Florida and maybe some of the premier jobs in college football in general. How do you sort of approach that from an athletics director perspective and trying to get the jump on that? Not so much because you're trying to be first out to practice, so to speak, in terms of your search and identifying and trying to secure your top candidates, but how you're going to have to make that work with that portal there in early January, trying to salvage whatever of your football team that you're inheriting as you can, while also adding to it via the
portal. But at least people will know what's going on and where they can plan. And that is, very important and to take the pressure off of having not two but one, I think will make a humongous difference. And once fans get used to it, I think they'll like it too.
Yeah, I agree. I think so. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I do know for recruiting staff people in these programs.
Yes.
That's going to be rough. But you know what? You've got so much of the high school recruiting now wrapped up in December that you could essentially just make that second signing period, so to speak, almost entirely about the portal. And there is still, because of how things work now with that December date, and we'll see how that maybe changes too in terms of signing dates moving forward. We'll try to figure that out. But what we wanted to do tonight, Brent, is kind of move through the upcoming weekend's action, September the 13th, that's Saturday, third Saturday already in the college football season. I don't know how much I like saying that.
Really?
Like it just flies by. But as we alluded to from the top of the show, really a legitimate slate of football games in the league on Saturday. And what we'll do is we'll start right there at the top, right there at the early window. And at 12 Eastern, 11 Central, that return date by the Wisconsin Badgers to the Alabama Crimson Tide. Alabama went up to Camp Randall last year, Brent, put a pretty good number on Bucky.
He did.
Wisconsin coming in at 2-0. Wisconsin has a little bit of a quarterback issue because of an injury to their week one starter in Billy Edwards. Danny O'Neill jumped in there last week against Middle Tennessee. The Badgers really struggled offensively in the first half of that win over MTSU. Turned it on in the second half. O'Neill was better. They've had some changes, wholesale changes to that offensive staff. Maybe it's going to be, maybe it'll look a little more like what we're used to seeing from Wisconsin in the past. That, of course, being physical, run heavier. They were kind of air raidish, actually, in recent years, which is hard to imagine with Wisconsin, but what do you expect from the Alabama side of this? Because the Crimson Tide responded to that season opening loss at Florida State by demolishing ULM last Saturday night at Bryant-Denny Stadium, 73-0. It looked like a much more comfortable Ty Simpson in his first home start. And some other guys emerging for this Alabama offense as well, too, right?
Yeah, no doubt. Lontier Brooks, the freshman wide receiver, was targeted five times, caught four passes, 58 yards, really looked good. I mean, this is a guy that can put a little pressure on the starters in order to get some playing time. Bama is a 20-point favorite, according to Caesars. Noon kick, which now the humidity would be lower and the skies will be clear, but it's still probably going to be in the 90s. So that's something that won't be easy. But I will say this, compared to the Florida State game where they, and I certainly heard some of you and Chase Goodbread talking about both games, and boy, Bama looked much better in this second game. They were certainly enthusiastic to play. I think they were really on the money as far as their passing was concerned. Offensive line, frankly, the line of scrimmage in general did a good job. Now, well, we're not going to pretend ULM is a great football team because they're not, but Bama got done what they needed to do and were pretty efficient doing it, Trav.
They were. It was a confidence-building performance, you would think. I think for the Alabama fan base, though, it is jaded at this point, given the results of the last 10 or 11 games dating back to last season. Some ways it almost feels a little bit like early on with Billy Napier at Florida, although we know Jalen DeBoer at the P5 level, P4 level, has had quite a bit of success. So it doesn't line up entirely for sure. But, yeah, I would think Alabama, in terms of styles making fights, we talk about that on the show a lot. I think for – what they're going to see or what they anticipate seeing from this Wisconsin offense should be a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more in their wheelhouse. Gus Malzahn made them very uncomfortable on the defensive side of the ball. I don't know if that's going to be as much of a problem this weekend, although Jeff Grimes has a history of doing nice work around college football as as an offensive coordinator. So playing at home, as you said, just sort of the stamina issues that you might see with Wisconsin coming down from Madison. I was in Milwaukee and Green Bay over the weekend. Went to the Packers-Lions game Sunday. Yeah. At Lambeau Field, it was 60 to 65 degrees, Brent. felt like November,
woo!
You know, in Duval.
Yeah.
And, but I started thinking about that from the Wisconsin perspective. That's going to be a little bit of a different deal for the Badgers. But for Alabama, it's really about stacking performances, isn't it?
It is.
Because you know what's coming down the pike. You need to take care of business in this early kickoff. Show up. Be engaged like you were against ULM. Yep. Be impressive, get the win first and foremost, and then start to think about Georgia coming up in a couple weeks.
Well, and some guys who really did, I thought the quarterbacks did fine. I mean, Simpson was perfect. Great. 17 of 17, Austin Mack, Keelon Russell. I tell you what, Trev, Russell just looks like a big time player. Does he not? Mm-hmm. And he threw a couple of touchdowns. Richard Young scored on the ground. AK Deer had a late 56-yard touchdown, and Jeremy Bernard and Isaiah Horton did fine. And frankly, I thought the Bama defense did well. And we understand the competition that they've got, but I think a lot of these guys, they got some information and line up straight after that debacle in Tallahassee.
You know, I think there are ties, though, for Jeff Grimes and Gus Malzahn. They wouldn't talk this week, would they? Because Jeff Grimes was the offensive line coach, if I'm lining this up correctly, at Auburn. And he was a part of Auburn's 2010 national championship season.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be interesting. Grimes, again, he's a wily veteran as an offensive coordinator. He'll understand how to attack this Alabama defense, and I would think that will involve a good bit of the perimeter and also trying to get Alabama's defensive eyes to sort of betray them a little bit, maybe be a little bit undisciplined. We'll see how that goes. Big performance coming up for Alabama.
Yes.
Not just in terms of getting the win, but again, performing at a level that sort of lines up with the hope right now after last Saturday night that this team is trending in the right direction. Let's keep it moving on Saturday as we move through this lineup. Here's an interesting game for you. Oklahoma going to Philly to take on Temple. And boy, I got to think a lot of Boomer Sooner Nation is going to be in Philly for this one, especially on the heels of that performance by the Sooners against the Michigan Wolverines. John Mateer has been everything they could have hoped in Norman right now at the quarterback position. Also doing a pretty good job when he runs it too, Brent.
He does. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no question about that. And look, Temple is 2-0. Casey Keeler and quarterback Evan Simon, who's a Rutgers transfer, has 9 touchdowns and no picks. So, now we're not saying Temple is going to win by any stretch of imagination. Sooners won last year 51-3. So, I think they will certainly be able to cover the spread. But Oklahoma, Trav, as we know, has Auburn coming up very shortly. So they want to look sharp from this game. So it will carry over. Jaden Ott, the running back who came from Cal, continues to nurse an injury. So he needs to get better, frankly. But I will tell you this, of all the games that we watched last weekend, that win of Oklahoma over Michigan was certainly one of them, wasn't it, Travis?
It really was. That Oklahoma defense, too, give it credit. That looked more along the lines of what you expect from a Brent Venables coach team. Justice Haynes, the Alabama transfer, had a big game for Michigan, 19 carries, 125 yards, and a touchdown. But other than that, Bryce Underwood, the 5-star freshman quarterback for the Wolverines, a very pedestrian 9 of 24 for 142 yards. Mm-hmm. He was sacked once. And then Mateer again throws for 270 on 34 attempts. And then also leads OU in rushing in that win with 19 carries, ran it 19 times for 74 yards and two touchdowns. At some point, right, OU's going to have to get more from those backs. And whether it's Jaden Ott getting healthy or Javonte Barnes, one of these guys, they're going to have to figure it out. I know the offensive line, it looks like, is improved over a year ago when it was just not very good at all. Deion Burks emerging in this win over Michigan with 7 catches for 101. Didn't have enough at the wide receiver position last year. So some real positives for this OU team, but still a lot more to learn as they get more and more into the meat of SEC play coming up here in a few weeks. The Auburn Tigers at 12:45 Eastern on Saturday on the SEC Network, going to play an in-state opponent in the Jaguars of South Alabama. Auburn 2-0 after a couple of impressive performances.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Especially that week one win in Waco. And boy, Jackson Arnold seems like this might be the fit for him. At Auburn, he really stepped up in that win over Baylor. Looks very comfortable in this Hugh Freeze offense, which does put some emphasis on him as the runner as well. Want to see more of his ability to take advantage of guys like Cam Coleman on the outside. But boy, Auburn has to feel good about the very likelihood of being 3-0 after this game on Saturday.
I tell you what, Jackson Arnold was starting to use his feet in the game, didn't he, Travis? 142 yards rushing was certainly impressive. Now, this is already homecoming for Auburn. Boy, they wanted to get that in there early, didn't they? But I don't blame him because, Trav, at Oklahoma, at A&M, and then Georgia at home, that, man, that, except for the Gators, that's as tough a three-game stretch as anybody in the league has, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And that's, you know, that's part of the problem, as we'll get into with the Florida Gators. When you start dropping games, even against a quality non-con in South Florida, you look up and you see what's coming down the pike. But, yeah, Jackson Arnold very efficient in the win over Ball State last Saturday in the home opener for the Tigers, 24-28, 251, three tutties. That'll work. Most weeks, right? That'll typically get it done. Now, there's been, I guess, some question about maybe the running back position, you know, and sort of the health there of one of your top guys. But Jeremiah Cobb, at least against Ball State, very, very good. 11 carries for 121 yards and a couple of touchdowns. Talked about Cam Coleman, 7 for 77, catching the football. Singleton comes over from Georgia Tech. I thought we started to see some glimpses of what he can really be like. Very dynamic, very explosive in this Hugh Freeze offense.
And by the way, this tells you a lot about the Auburn program. The last time they were ranked was 2021 when Brian Harsin was there, Trev.
Wow. How about that? That's going back a little ways, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
But Auburn just off to a really nice start to this 2025 season, and it should get better after that non-con matchup with the Jaguars from South Al. Here is where it starts to get really fun on Saturday, Brent. How about the Georgia Bulldogs taking it on the road early in the season to Knoxville, Tennessee, to take on a bunch of Vols that have been very, very explosive and very, very exciting through two games with Joey Aguilar in there at the quarterback position. I don't sense a lot of people missing Nico in Knoxville these days.
No. Matter of fact, there have been a lot of criticisms from Nico. Hadn't really done much either at UCLA, but Gunnar Stockton has been – now, Trav, I think I know the answer to this. Would Kirby rather Gunner be turnover free or throw for, what, 350 yards and three touchdowns and a pick? I can tell you, I think I know which one it is, and he's been turnover free so far. And Joey Aguilar has looked good for Tennessee, which brings up certainly an interesting point, 330 game. But really biggest SEC game of the season so far. Georgia has not looked great at times. But, look, these are games that Kirby wins. And I like Georgia in this game. Now, look, Tennessee very well has played well. Boo Carter had a good game, one of the better punt returners in the league. And college game day will be there. So, man, Trev, this has been everything you could want in an SEC headliner, doesn't it?
Absolutely does. And we talk about styles and the sort of conflict that they present to each other in matchups like this. You know, Tennessee wants to go very fast,
yes,
on offense, and Georgia is going to be quite content. Yeah. With running that play clock down under 10 seconds. Gunnar Stockton last week against Austin Peay in one of those games. Boy, several games last weekend that were interrupted by weather delays. Yeah. 26 of 34 for 227, but not a performance that I'm sure Kirby wanted from an offensive perspective of putting the ball in the end zone enough. Nate Frazier, yeah. Chauncey Bowens mm-hmm. is coming on at the running back position. But you know what? We've talked a lot about this Tennessee defense, and was there going to be a pretty significant drop-off from the squad they had a year ago when they had legit NFL guys kind of across the board, and especially up front, maybe in that front seven a year ago? That's where we're going to find out. And about Georgia, too, because Georgia up front offensively last year was pretty subpar by Georgia standards.
They were.
Have they taken another step? You know, they've had some guys that they've had to replace, especially on the interior. Tate Ratledge now with the Detroit Lions. You've got Mike Bobo's son, Drew Bobo, mm-hmm. is now the starting mm-hmm. center for the Georgia Bulldogs. So I've sensed maybe a little bit of a retro SEC game. Yes, Tennessee's going to go fast, but at the end of the day, Tennessee's still going to want to run the football.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And by the way, in Georgia's previous game against Austin Peay, a 99-yard drive on 17 plays took up 8 minutes and 43 seconds, Trav. if Kirby could get three of those going into this week, he'd take in a heartbeat, wouldn't he?
You know, and Georgia's won 8 straight in a series. And, yes. And especially since Heupel's been at Tennessee, we've gone into this thinking – you know, can Tennessee get Georgia out of its comfort zone? Mm-hmm. And Kirby has not allowed that to happen.
No,
you know, he hasn't allowed this matchup to be in the high 20s, mid 30s, I'm sure, which is something Heupel is going to be much more comfortable with than his team. But Tennessee with a 70 burger for ETSU last Saturday. Mm-hmm. And we talked about Aguilar, 23 of 31, 288, couple of touchdowns. And, you know, I think it was good for Tennessee, too, you know, after the season opener, challenging season opener against Syracuse, to see an ETSU and be able to play 3 quarterbacks and kind of develop mm-hmm. some depth there, or at least get some guys on the field. And we wondered about this running back situation, but Sean Bishop, Star Thomas, mm-hmm. you know, to this point, looks like a team that still might be able to run the ball quite effectively. But again, for both of these teams, both of these offenses, the real test comes Saturday at Neyland Stadium. Georgia still has the better roster.
They do.
Brent.
Yes.
But, you know, if Tennessee's able to get this thing more into the sort of style of game it wants, mm-hmm. maybe the Vols who have strapped, who have dropped long losing streaks to the likes of Alabama in recent years, Maybe Heupel's able to get another one off of the Vols' back this week.
He could very well. And what you're saying is whoever dictates play in the tempo of the play will go.
Who gets the game that they want?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Who gets the game they want? Yes. 4 o'clock Eastern on Saturday from Como. Boy, you talk about an exciting game last Saturday at Farrell Field at Memorial Stadium there in Columbia. How about Missouri and Kansas last week? Boy, 42-31. Missouri gets it done, but not until the Tigers convert multiple fourth downs, Brent, and a couple of those fourth down conversions went for touchdowns in that game.
Sure did. Well, look, and Missouri deserves a lot of credit. They have Louisiana this week, but at the same time, they have done what they wanted to do. They've kind of done it under the radar, have they not? And they've got bigger game to bag as the season goes along. But and when you and I looked at Missouri's schedule, it was a September that they could handle, and if that really helps them for October, it will certainly be worth it. But and I thought Pribula so far, Trav, has they did a good job getting him, and what he's done has been pretty impressive.
Yeah, they're without Sam Horn moving forward at the quarterback position. He took that nasty hit.
Yes.
Below or right at around the knees there in the week one win for the Tigers. But Pribula coming in from Penn State has been Levis-like, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
When Will Levis made that move to Kentucky, maybe even a little more dynamic, a little more explosive. But he goes 30 for 39 last week for 334 against the Jayhawks with three touchdowns. He was sacked four times. And look, Missouri – kind of under the radar, like Ole Miss, like Tennessee, still wants to run it. I mean, they still want to run the football. And you look at the numbers for Jamal Roberts and Ahmad Hardy last Saturday, a combined 259 rushing yards, or 255 rushing yards, I guess it was, and two touchdowns for that combination. And Pribula, they don't want running it a ton, probably less now with Horn's situation not looking all that promising. But Pribula also making great use of Kevin Coleman at the wide receiver position. The Mississippi State transfer goes 10 for 126 last week, and he's got a tight end too in Brett Norfleet, who came up huge with a couple of touchdown grabs against KU.
Not really nice start for the Tigers as they and they obviously having to replace some really good offensive players from last year, particularly a quarterback, wide receiver. Missouri is impressive as anybody right now.
They really are. And you got to give Eli Drinkwitz a lot of credit for what that program. It almost has started to become a situation where there's this Mizzou magic too.
Yeah.
Farrell Field. Like the Oklahoma game, I think it was last year, how crazy that was. They are tough now over there, and there's some teams that still have to go in there. Alabama comes to mind as one of those teams down the road that will make that trip not only to Columbia, Missouri, but also to Columbia, South Carolina.
Yes.
As well, as we continue to move through Saturday schedule in the Southeastern Conference, we're going to talk about 4:15 Eastern on SEC Network. UTEP making the trip from West Texas over to Austin to take on the Longhorns, who kind of like Alabama got a needed win last Saturday. I don't know if it rated as highly on the feel good meter for Texas. It was more workmanlike.
Yeah.
And boy, the performance of Arch Manning every week, it's going to be under the microscope. It's not just games against Ohio State and Florida coming up and Georgia down the road that you're going to hear just every throw being dissected and taken apart. But I thought even for Arch, yes, it could certainly have been better. But he too, you got to think, was able to build a little bit of confidence playing at home, getting his team into the end zone on multiple occasions. Doesn't mean he still doesn't have a lot to work on, though. There are still some – the expectations are just so high that the expectation for him – in that game last Saturday was to have a performance like Ty Simpson of Alabama had against ULM.
Well, and obviously it didn't happen. I mean, did Manning improve? Yes. Does he have a forward way to go? Yes. But Trav, now, one thing I've learned from you over the years of us working together in the early 90s, one thing you pick up real quick is when a quarterback's fundamentals are uncomfortable, that tells you something. I mean, and what I mean by that is the angle of his arm, his footwork, what he does when he's under pressure. And look, this is not saying that he won't be really good or at least much better by November, but I and maybe you do. I don't see Arch comfortable yet. Do you?
I'll tell you, though, in this era of football, though, in general, at just about every level, including the National Football League, I see quarterbacks on a weekly basis that, in terms of classic textbook fundamentals, footwork, those type of things, arm angle, slot, it seems like we put so much emphasis on off-platform throws, as they're called, that the basic stuff maybe gets overlooked these days when we're developing these quarterbacks. And also, Quinn Ewers, the guy Arch Manning spent the last 2 years sort of watching and playing behind, you know, he was anything but a classic mechanical operator. So, we're going to take every throw and break it down.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
As much as we possibly can with Arch Manning. You look at his numbers from last week against San Jose State, 19 for 30. 295, four touchdowns. He did have another pick. I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but when I look at Texas's run game, maybe I have a little bit more of a question against a team like San Jose State. When you run it for 165, CJ Baxter, 13 for 64 and a touchdown or no touchdowns. Manning had Texas's only rushing touchdown. You want to help Arch Manning become a better quarterback, run it a little bit better than that. But I will say this, Parker Livingstone, when you watch Arch with that guy, the young wide receiver for the Longhorns who caught four balls for 128 and a couple of touchdowns. And I did like what we saw at the tight end position for Texas in that game.
Yes.
Because that was a big question mark after a season ago. That seems to be improving on a weekly basis as well. I'm just gonna give it a little time, Brent.
Yes,
that's all I'm saying. I'm just gonna give Arch maybe a little bit more time.
Yes.
Than a lot of folks seem to be doing.
Yes.
Six Eastern on Saturday night. How about this? It ought to be a party at Davis Wade Stadium with Mississippi State coming off of that win, that improbable finish over a top 15 opponent in Arizona State last Saturday night. Mississippi State gets it done. All the credit in the world to Jeff Lebby, Blake Shapen, the Bulldogs. And you know what? Kind of got on Coleman Hutzler here on the show last year as a first-year coordinator under Jeff Lebby. And I think fairly so in some instances. Look, I understand the personnel a year ago from Mississippi State – you could add Bill Oliver reincarnate. You could add a lot of different people trying to work with that group. And there was going to be struggles. But the Mississippi State offense obviously came up huge at the end. But the defensive improvement's very evident for this team in year two under Jeff Lebby too.
And listen, everything they've done has been improved. I think the thing that impressed me, Arizona State scored 20 straight points. Took the lead with a minute 38 left, and then you get a 5-play, 77-yard drive. State, first time they've beaten a top 15 non-conference opponent, first time since 91. So they deserve a lot of credit. Shapen was a good 19 of 33 for 279, three touchdowns. Thompson had six catches for 133. Now this is something that you don't – maybe you see it more now than you used to. Trav, Arizona State had 250-yard rushing. Yeah. 250 rushing, and you lose lost. The game. Yeah. I mean, that you used to never see that. But your point a few minutes ago, it's a different game today, is it not?
It really is. And that drive for Arizona State to take the lead was as disheartening for a football team to experience. Arizona State went 17 plays, 95 yards.
Man.
Before Mississippi incredible. State came back to win it with a 58-yard touchdown pass with 30 seconds left. So it does speak to that sort of chin that you mentioned. But, boy, Brennan Thompson came up big as the wide receiver for Mississippi State, working with Blake Shapen, six catches for 133 yards and two of those touchdowns. As you said, Arizona State with 251 on the ground, and that's without Cam Scataboo, who is now a New York Giant from a year ago. And huge, huge win for the Mississippi State Bulldogs. Look, Alcorn State's going to win halftime on Saturday night because the band is going to light it up for Alcorn State. But, you kind of like the Bulldogs to get to, 3-0?
And listen, let me mention one thing, too. The state defense – that was ridiculed last year.
Yeah.
Six tackles for loss, two sacks, and two interceptions, Trav. How about that?
They were terrible a year ago.
Right? Yes.
That's the thing is Mississippi State was largely not competitive a year ago. Not just a bad team in terms of win-loss column and winless in Southeastern Conference play, but just not really competitive. So all the credit in the world to Jeff Lebby and his staff for, with what we're seeing from this turnaround. We'll see if they can sustain it. I still worry about that roster over the long haul. Definitely. And a lot of this is going to be contingent upon Blake Shapen staying healthy, which he wasn't able to do a year ago. So you kind of knock on wood a little bit with some of this with the Bulldogs. Although I will say this too, and I know Levitt's a good player for Arizona State, but I saw some of the draft analysts in the lead up to this season, seeing some of these quarterbacks as first round guys like Levitt and Klubnik and some of them, I was, maybe let's let them play a little bit longer. I wasn't quite as sold, but Shapen can line up and play quarterback with just about anybody. He really can. Arkansas going to travel to Ole Miss on Saturday night. That's a 7:00 Eastern kickoff on ESPN. Vaught-Hemingway Stadium. The Rebels had a little bit more than I think a lot of people thought they were going to get from Kentucky in a 7-point win over Mark Stoops' team last Saturday, Brent.
Yeah, they sure did. Game performance by Kentucky. We'll talk about them a little bit more in a few minutes. A little bit of concern about Austin Simmons. Had an ankle injury. Hopefully he will be with that would certainly be a big help. Lacey, four touchdowns, two 100-yard games in 2 weeks, a Missouri transfer.
What is it about these Missouri running backs? Really? Whether they transfer into Missouri or they transfer out. Pretty darn good, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are. But I tell you what, Arkansas, to their credit, frankly, has looked really good. This is a great thing about this league right now. You've got LSU in Florida, you got Georgia, Tennessee, Notre Dame and A&M, but you've also got South Carolina and Vanderbilt, both of them 2-0, and Ole Miss and Arkansas. That's the same thing. I know the Big Ten can beat his chest a little bit, for about, three games. But, what you and I are talking about here is they're about, half a dozen games in the SEC that at this point are big-time games Saturday.
They are. And even from a non-conference perspective, as we're going to talk about here in a little bit,
yes,
You have A&M, yeah, going to Notre Dame on the road. And a lot of this has entailed the SEC as road teams. Even as we get more and more into conference play, these sprinkling to non-cons like Notre Dame and Texas A&M that we'll get to, yeah, it's a legitimate situation, no doubt about it. Harrison Wallace, by the way, for Ole Miss. We kind of wondered who that next guy was going to be.
Right.
With Trey Harris moving on and the wide receiver situation. I mean, you know Lane's always going to have
another train
coming. But Harrison Wallace, a Penn State transfer with 247 receiving yards, Brent, through two games. He's been a revelation for the Ole Miss Rebels.
And may I say that Ole Miss defense has not been quiet either. They're not perfect. But I still say that what Lane's done on that side of the ball and that coaching staff still deserves a lot of credit.
It does. And a coaching staff that will get a lot of credit if it can take care of business on the road in Oxford on Saturday night is Sam Pittman, Bobby Petrino, Travis Williams, that staff for the Razorbacks. Mm-hmm. Can they hang in there and give themselves a chance in this game? What about Taylen Green? He's been great for the most part, but even against Arkansas State, there are a couple of situations with a couple of interceptions, or just as we've seen him over the last season and change, where you worry a little bit about his sustainability in terms of consistency. I mean, explosive. There's no doubt about it. Twitchy as all get out, Taylen Green.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And throws for 239. Against Butch Jones and Arkansas State in Little Rock last Saturday night, four touchdown passes, runs for 151 and a touchdown. I mean, just so many things this guy can do. I think the key for him is to still try to stay within the framework of Bobby Petrino's offense and not allow himself to get caught up in, well, this is a prove it game for me on a big stage. And everybody's talking about Austin Simmons when I've been doing this at a high level for, as we talked about, going into my second season here.
Yeah. Tell you what, on the defensive side of the ball, Xavier Sorey didn't do much in that first game, but had 14 tackles, five solo, two tackles for loss, half a sack and a pick. Look, I understand the competition, but Trevor, I don't care if you're playing the backyard against the neighborhood kids. That's a really good Saturday, is it not?
You know Arkansas wants this game Saturday night.
Oh, yeah.
Because who has picked their pocket for players more than any other team in college football?
No question.
I kind of jokingly tweeted during the Ole Miss game against Kentucky last Saturday. Boy, Arkansas has done a great job of developing Ole Miss players.
They really
because
have.
It just feels like they have just worn Arkansas out via the transfer portal. But, boy, a good quarterback matchup in that game Saturday night in Oxford. And, again, Taylen Green's going to do some really, really fun stuff in this game, I think. It's the other end of the spectrum that he's going to have to try to keep to a minimum if Arkansas is going to get the job done as a road dog. Also on Saturday night, the Kentucky Wildcats, fresh off that disappointing home defeat at the hand of the aforementioned Ole Miss Rebels, will welcome from the MAC, second MAC opponent, right, for Kentucky in three games.
Yeah.
And this should be a second win over the MAC for a Kentucky team that's going to count every win it can this season, with Eastern Michigan coming in at 0-2, Brent.
Look, I know that playing well doesn't necessarily always lead up to a win, but I give Kentucky a lot of credit. In that Ole Miss game, they did some nice things. I mean, they jumped out 10-0 after a pair of interceptions. Ty Bryan had a couple, but then they trail for a while, which and they never could really overcome that. They had some miscommunications. Zach Calzada was sacked because of one of those. They've still got some stuff they've got to get straightened out. But I do give Kentucky a lot of credit By the way, Stoops at Kentucky Trav, the thing where I think I see here, 13 seasons head coach, 15 different quarterbacks and 6 different offensive coordinators.
Goes through a few, yeah.
Yeah, not a lot of stability there, is it?
No. I guess one of the real bright spots for Kentucky, Seth McGowan runs it 15 times for 93 yards against Ole Miss, a couple of touchdowns. Not very explosive in the run game. Calzada actually had the longest run by a Kentucky player in that game, and he's not exactly Secretariat, as we know. He had a 22-yarder, but yeah, you still ran it for 193 and a couple of touchdowns. And most weeks, that's going to work for Kentucky. Yeah, the problem is Ole Miss ran it for 220 and 3 touchdowns.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That can be the difference in the game sometimes when you look at it from that perspective. So Kentucky should get back on the winning track against EMU on Saturday night. Also Saturday night. It is Saturday night in Death Valley. How about this one? Florida, after that home loss to South Florida last Saturday night at the stadium previously known as the Swamp.
Yes.
The Gators limp to Baton Rouge at 1-1 heading into conference play against an LSU team. Wasn't exactly prolific last Saturday night on the offensive side of the ball. You wonder how much maybe – you had some residual hangover from the big win at Clemson and understanding that Florida is on deck. That's the ultimate sort of sandwich game for LSU last week. But, boy, one that the Florida Gators desperately need. And I know it feels unfair in a way because South Florida's a good team.
Yeah.
You know, but I get it from the perspective of if you're a Florida fan, you're still Florida football. Mm-hmm. You know, you're a, 3-time national champion.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
That's not USF.
No.
But I'll say this, and I said it since Saturday night, and even going into Saturday night, I said it. USF is not a team that you want to play in September.
No, I agree.
If you're Florida and you have clearly the better roster, you'd love to see USF if you see them at all in November.
Yes.
But USF played Alabama off its feet the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. Took everything Alabama had a year ago at home to get past the Bulls. And so the problem, though, for Florida fans at this point in the Billy Napier tenure is that I don't know any Florida people that are just outright pulling for LSU to win this game.
Yeah.
But I also get the sense that they're early in the week, a lot of Florida people already, they're not beating LSU. There's no way they – and it's almost laced with what you sense to be some hope that Florida doesn't win the game. Because if Florida wins this game, these Florida fans are going to be in that purgatory they were in a year ago. They've seen this before with Billy Napier.
Oh, yes.
And he worked his way out of it a year ago.
He did.
And his AD, Scott Strickland, helped him do it. Scott Strickland last week gets a damn extension.
He does.
You know, and then Napier pays him back by going out and losing at home to South Florida. But with Billy Napier, there's too many glaring issues.
Yes.
In so many of these losses between clock management, like against USF in the fourth quarter last Saturday night, like special teams failures.
Yeah.
You know, you lose by two and you gave up a safety on a punt snap over the punter's head. Penalties, 11 penalties against Florida against USF. So it's not meant, I know, to take away from USF, which is rightfully ranked this week in the top 20 of the polls, but it's more about what Florida isn't under Billy Napier on a consistent basis.
Yeah, and without the risk of piling on, Florida's allowed 18 tackles for loss in 2 games. That's 129th nationally in tackles for loss. And again, losing a pretty good player now, Jay McCray.
Yeah.
Foot surgery now.
Yeah.
So that's a real problem. I mean, Lagway was he went bad, 23-33 for 222, one touchdown and a pick. But, Trav, the thing that really was concerning, Florida punted 6 of its 7 drives in the second half.
Yeah.
While Pelley's negated a pair of touchdowns. So, and the other thing here that really needs to be brought out is LSU is not playing two-hand tag on defense anymore.
No.
They are playing much better.
Physical. Yeah.
Much better defensively, Travis, and if you ask me what's their biggest improvement so far, I mean, they've got Wes Weeks and some guys on that side of the line, Harold Perkins, mm-hmm. who are really good. But I can tell you this, LSU has significantly improved on that side of the ball.
Clearly, across the board, the best team Kelly's had in Baton Rouge.
Yes.
To this point, I'm interested in the running backs in this matchup of LSU in Florida, because I think, again, kind of like how we talked about how it might play out with LSU at Clemson, Caden Durham being a real wild card in that game, and could LSU just run it enough give Nussmeier what he needed at the quarterback position? I think that's going to be true for both of these offenses. We're going to be so caught up in Garrett Nussmeier and DJ Lagway, Jacoby Jackson, Jaden Ball for Florida, Durham for LSU. You know, what can the backs bring to this thing? Yeah. Because I think this is going to be a tight game. I agree. Again, the Florida fan base is done over. Don't try to run it back with Billy Napier if he has us 8-4 even. If they go 8-4, it might be tougher to get rid of him than maybe Florida fans want to admit. But it's going to be a fun game still on Saturday night at Death Valley. I like LSU in that game, but I won't be surprised if Florida goes. And I've said this in the last couple of days. I sort of drew the analogy to 99 Alabama, Chase and.
Yeah.
You know, that team in 99 lost to La Tech, went right on the road, beat Florida in the swamp.
Yep,
you know
they sure did.
Yeah. And this Florida team kind of has those sort of vibes, because it wasn't even about talent 99 for Alabama either.
No.
Let's get into that 7:30 game. This is NBC football, because Texas A&M is traveling to Notre Dame. Top 20 matchup, 16th ranked Aggies going to take on the 8th ranked Irish of Notre Dame. And boy, you talk about kind of, again, the running back position for both these teams is going to be a big part of this, because I think this game could have a feel similar to Florida and LSU. Again, I think there's more potential for a shootout with Florida LSU, although I know the numbers for Lagway didn't look awful against USF. There's still something not right about him, even if it's just that his issues health-wise kept him from off-season work, and maybe he's not as sharp early in the season. Maybe that's going to improve. But I don't think there's any doubt. And I think Mike Elko is fine with it being that sort of game, physical game, kind of like what it was in College Station last year between these two, right?
Oh, yeah. And the Aggies – lead the league, I know it's early, in tackles for loss, 9 for the second straight. So they've got 18, nearly 20, which is pretty impressive. KC Concepcion, first Aggie with back-to-back multiple touchdowns, Trav, since Anaya Smith in 2021. Mario Craver, second straight 100-yard game. And Terry Boosie had a touchdown, too. So there are certainly weapons there. You know, the interesting thing to me about Notre Dame is, I mean, look, and you know what's going around, and I do too, from some media, and I got some of this today, is, well, what if Napier doesn't make it at Florida? would Notre Dame be in a situation, would their coach be interested in going? Well, you know, he might, but I'm telling you, he's got a pretty good thing going there. And I know this is a trivial thing, but it does make a difference. Trav, when Notre Dame gets in the postseason, correct me if I'm wrong, but they're not sharing money with just about anybody, are they?
So, yeah, Marcus Freeman's got a pretty good setup.
He does, don't he? Absolutely.
There's a couple different ways to look at him as a potential candidate at a place like Florida. And for me, it all goes back to viability to win a national championship.
Yes.
That's what it goes back to. And I know you can look at Florida in some ways, you can say talent base, but Notre Dame can recruit Florida. Notre Dame can recruit pretty much nationally.
Yes.
And then you get into the war chest, the commitment these days, resources, you know, Notre Dame's going to be fine there. And if you're good, if you leave Notre Dame like Brian Kelly did,
absolutely.
You're the majority of the fan base was okay, it felt like, with Brian Kelly, but then there were plenty of folks who I don't think had a real problem. Brian Kelly left for LSU.
Right. Yes.
This to me, unless Notre Dame just falls off a cliff, and look, there's some desperation involved for Notre Dame going in this game Saturday night. They already have a loss. They're 0-1.
That's right.
So, and you know, they came back from a loss early a year ago against Northern Illinois at home and ended up playing for the national championship. Texas A&M's a capable team.
They are.
Of going in there and winning. I think, you know, for A&M, Marcel Reed as a dual threat, it's probably going to come down to which of these defenses can put the opposing quarterback in a position they least likely would want to be.
Right.
In other words, can A&M defensively make CJ Carr win the game, right? For Notre Dame.
Yes.
And Notre Dame can't just kind of line up and hand the ball to Jeremiah Love and the backs and kind of, you know, control the game from that perspective. So that's what this game, I think, ultimately comes down to, which of these defenses, and I think the defenses are going to be really good for both teams, put more of it on the quarterback and the opposing passing game to get the job done. Hey, the final game we'll talk about on Saturday, Brent, you know, most years this would be a sleepy sort of late night game.
Oh, yes.
You know, SEC Network, 7:45 Eastern. We're not going to try to really compete with Texas A&M at Notre Dame on NBC. But, hey, if I'm SEC Network, I'm feeling a lot better about this Vanderbilt-South Carolina matchup.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. There's no doubt about that. And you've got – look, you've got two of the more exciting quarterbacks in the league, don't you?
You really do.
Diego Pavia and Lenore Sellers.
Absolutely.
And listen, Trav, correct me if I'm wrong, and I know it's early. This is not your dad's or my dad's Vanderbilt.
No, and they're more than Pavia. And we're obviously – on record for a long time on this program, years now of being big Pavia fans. But yeah, Vandy with a couple of the running backs that they've got to go along with Pavia running it, Cedric Alexander, Young. It's not a one-man show by any means.
No. And Trey Richardson, 128 yards, and Eli Stowers, who may be the best tight end in the league, 115 yards. And Trav, listen, again, I mean, how many times have you seen Vandy trailing 20-10 at halftime and score 34 unanswered points in the second half? What in the world?
As much as I love Diego, when I saw 20-10 at the half, I said, well, this is going to be tough at Lane Stadium. Yeah, no, it wasn't because they just came out and rolled a once very proud Virginia Tech program that Frank Beamer built. And look, did a great job against a really good quarterback. We talk about this Vandy offense, but Kyren Drones is a high-level quarterback in college football for Virginia Tech. Limited him to 134 passing yards on 29 attempts. So not even 5 yards per attempt. Didn't give up the explosive plays through the air. Really didn't give it up on the ground either. I mean, Tech ran for 114 yards, but they sacked Drones 3 times. And kept the long run plays to about 27 yards. So longest completion for Drones in the game was a 33-yarder. Oh, and then you look over at Vanderbilt in some of the chunk plays. You had a 62-yard run for Young. You had a 21-yarder for Alexander. You had a 54-yard completion to Bryson Coleman from Diego Pavia. You had multiple 25-plus yard type completion. So, you know, Vandy offensively a year ago was more of a death by a thousand cuts with Pavia kind of keeping drives alive.
Right.
But this group looks a little bit more explosive than a year ago, maybe.
And listen, running the ball, averaged 7 yards a carry.
Yeah. That's tough for Virginia Tech, man.
It really is.
And again, you know, we've seen Vandy do this last year. You know, that wasn't a fluke last year. So it shouldn't be the reaction, but it's still going to be. It's almost how Florida felt after that loss to South Florida.
Yeah.
But it probably shouldn't as much. It's kind of what I think Tech's going through from a self-esteem perspective after what Vandy did in that second half, Brent.
Yeah. And listen, the question has to be asked, and I know it's too early for this, really, but I mean – Trev, and he loves Vanderbilt, and he deserves to be there as long as he wants to be. But, I mean, how much attention is Clark Lee getting right now for some schools who are even contemplating a change?
Pretty amazing, too, because, look, I mean, if we're going to be honest, if that migration from Las Cruces doesn't come over
– yeah.
With Stowers, not just Diego, but the coaching staff.
Yes, yes.
Jerry Kill, the offensive coordinator, comes over with Kill and Pavia and Stowers. If those guys don't come in, who knows if Clark Lee's even still the head coach
That's true.
Vanderbilt. And now you're going to hear talk about, well, what about maybe Clark Lee to Florida. I don't know if I'd maybe go with that, but
yeah,
you're right though. I mean, it's a reasonable sort of expectation at this point. But what about South Carolina in this matchup, Brent? I mean, Lenore Sellers, obviously, you know, working from that quarterback position, but you know, can he get enough help from the guys around him? Because as crazy as this sounds, you might be a little bit more confident in Diego's supporting cast going into this game than you are even South Carolina's.
I'm not believing that's coming out of her mouth, but there frankly is a lot of truth to that. And look, I know they beat Virginia Tech, but can we also say on the line of scrimmage, Vandy wasn't bad either, were they?
No, they held up, and that's, you know, they lost one of their starting tackles, Gunnar Hansen, to Florida State, you know, in the portal. So they've hung in there quite well from a personnel perspective. But yeah, South Carolina coming off a easy win over in-state FCS opponent South Carolina State. I think that was another one of those games where you had the weather delay and starts and stops. It was tough for some of these teams, sort of from the upstate of South Carolina down through Athens, Georgia, and that region right there. It was just tough to finish games, it seemed like. But Sellers threw for 128 against South Carolina State last week and ran it 8 times for 23 yards. Pretty pedestrian numbers for him. Although, again, it's South Carolina State. You know, you got Vanderbilt coming in the following Saturday. I'm sure Mike Shula kept it pretty close to the vest, which some Alabama fans would tell you, even in big games, Mike will keep it pretty close to the vest.
Yes, that's true. Oh, yeah. But I will say this. What's fascinating on a week like this, Travis, to me, you know, it's not just Georgia, Tennessee. in South Carolina, and
it's all day long.
I mean, it just is. I mean,
Alabama, Wisconsin.
No, that there's no question about that.
And you just keep working through the windows.
Yeah, absolutely.
Love Amazing. It. Let me ask you this, Brent. Not that we encourage it, but certainly wagering is a big part of Southeastern Conference Saturdays. Which of these sort of lines maybe strike a chord with you? Alabama is a 20-point favorite at home, as you talked about earlier, with Wisconsin coming in. Ole Miss laying 8.5. Is that game's in Oxford? Yeah,
it is.
What I'm reading here is wrong. Ole Miss is an 8.5-point home favorite. Georgia on the road as a 3.5-point favorite. I think that game opened like a touchdown, and it's gone down, the number has in the last few days. Texas A&M at Notre Dame. Notre Dame, what I'm looking at here, is a 7-point home favorite. LSU 8.5 at home over Florida. South Carolina 5.5 at home over Vanderbilt. Which of those lines maybe you think a little interesting, perhaps, stand out to you a little bit?
I don't think I'm ready to get on the bandwagon yet, but would it shock you necessarily if Vandy ends up controlling that game and being very close to winning it in the fourth quarter?
I think that could be a 3-point game either way.
Field goal type of game.
I do. Georgia at Tennessee feels like a setup a little bit.
I agree.
You know, at that 3.5. I'm not saying I would load up on the Bulldogs there, but, you know, I've seen that movie before, more so with Saban teams at Alabama, where situations like this would, you know, public really jumps early on an opponent for Saban, and then, you know, he'd end up winning those games by a couple touchdowns or, you know, double digits anyway. I think the potential is there for, I might go Arkansas getting 8.5 even on the road because of the big playability of Talon Green and what Bobby Petrino can put together offensively. The wild card there, I think, if you do that, is the Arkansas defense against that Ole Miss offense. But, you know, Ole Miss was an 8.5-point favorite this past weekend in Lexington, Brent.
Yes.
Until that late field goal.
That's right.
And they won by 7. So just proceed with caution, right, Brent? That's all we're saying is proceed with caution.
Well, and some of these lines are very – very tempting. Trav, could Wisconsin run the ball on the Bama defense and Bama be a little full of themselves after a big win, regardless of the opponent, and Wisconsin be in that game, going toward the end of the third quarter?
Could be, and I think a big part of that, too, is Ryan Williams going to play for Alabama.
Absolutely.
If Ryan Williams is going to play, I'd feel a little more comfortable about laying that 21. Yeah. And I don't know the Wisconsin quarterback situation well enough either. That's just, at this point, Alabama's a team I wouldn't trust either way. I wouldn't trust them to cover the 21. Yeah. And if I put it on Wisconsin, I'd have worries about Alabama having a half. Like they had, or a game like they had against Wisconsin a year ago, and that being plenty to sort of get home. So a lot of fun, a lot of great action coming up once again in the Southeastern Conference this Saturday. And Brent, look forward to recapping, reviewing, and previewing next week with you here on the program. Anything else, Brent, before we get out of here?
No, and look, they're just some great games, and this is great to see. And man, when the SEC is in that 9-game schedule next year, it really is even going to be better as we take a look at it. So it should be a an incredibly fun day all the way around. And I'll leave you with this. Now, I think Miami wins, but if South Florida is not too full of themselves, how long can they hang in that one?
I think as long as Barry and Brown is healthy for South Florida, they can hang around in games. He is a real difference maker at the quarterback position. They can make it tough. They don't back up defensively. They have no problem bringing pressure and, you know, getting you off the field like they did Florida last week. We'll see. We'll see how Miami handles it. I think Miami coming off an all week. I think both Miami and Notre Dame are coming off the off week because they played, you know, late in Labor Day weekend. So we'll see. Stuff Barbie here checking in the live chat. Brent says, been reading lots of discontent fans with the aforementioned Ryan Williams, not wanting Ryan Williams in the lineup. Wow. Look, you know, I know Ryan is today's era sort of player and marketable athlete and player. I get all that. I'm not even close to the point of thinking Alabama would be better without Ryan Williams in the lineup. And not just because Brent, what he does in terms of statistically catching the football and how he can, you know, impact games from that perspective. It's what he does just when he runs routes.
That's right.
Just having him on the field makes you a better run game.
Sure.
Makes Jeremy Bernard even better than he's been. And by the way, we should talk more about Jeremy Bernard because he's been outstanding. I get it. It wasn't good at Florida State and it ended with an injury to him, but no, I don't think we're to that point. I think, he definitely needs to be better. I think Isaiah Horton needs to be better. You know, there's a lot of people on that team right now that are going to have to be better before they go to Athens here in a couple of weeks' time. How about Chad checking in here in the show chat? He offers up a hearty good evening. We appreciate it, Chad. What's this? This is a Seminole in here, Brent, saying hello to you. Tyler Wright says, hey, Brent, hope all is well.
Appreciate that, Tyler. And the Seminoles still undefeated, had got a week off, but and Trav, you and I both know, got a few people going to be watching that Miami Florida State game coming up in a few weeks, right?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. It sets up nicely from a schedule perspective for Florida State. It's almost like, you know, there's a game a month.
Yeah,
for Florida State. Now, November, I think they get Clemson and then Florida, but, you know, who knows? Who knows what Florida's going to look like? Florida might look like Florida State looked like at the end of last year by the time those teams get together. Well, Brent, again, as always, a lot of fun with you, my friend, and we'll do it again real soon.
But and as we go, give me 30 seconds on Pomp.
Go ahead.
He's not happy with his Gators right now. Is he, Trav?
Well, the loss to USF sent Pops into exile. So he has left the country. He is in Vienna, Austria. Yeah, because when you think of Vienna, you think of Pops, right? Yeah, you can just see him on the streets of Vienna.
Yeah.
But he and Nana over there for a little getaway. This was planned.
He
didn't literally just book a flight and get out of the country after the Gators lost. But I haven't really been able to talk to him, and I guess I won't talk to him until he gets back. And that'll be after this trip to LSU for his Gators. So he might have some really interesting things to say in about a week time.
We're hoping and praying there'll be no international incidents involving Pops. Is that true?
You never know with Pops. you know, we'll have to see how that goes. You know, they may not let him back into the country when he tries to come back. I mean, you never know these days, right?
It's true. So. Absolutely.
All right, bud. Well, I look forward to doing it again next week.
Me too, bud. Enjoyed it. Take care.
For Brent Beard, I'm Travis Schreier. Thanking you once again for joining us right here on Ryer on YouTube for Second Helping, the show of choice for fans and followers of the most interesting, fun, and best league in all of college football, the Southeastern Conference. Until next time, so long, everybody.